everybody. Hello, my friends. How are you today? I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food, May 27, 2014. A nice, warm day here in New York City. I'm grateful for that. And shall we talk about food today? What an idea. I wanted to thank you. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for caring. You know, we all find a lot to disagree on, don't we? There's a lot of arguing in the world and people fighting for one thing or another. But when you want to relate to somebody, when you want to communicate and connect, I think we can all agree on a few simple things. We all want clean air to breathe. We all want clean water to drink. And we all want nutritious food, abundant nutritious food, to eat for ourselves and our families, right? So I'm using that as my starting point, as my jumping off point, as my connection point whenever I speak to people about food, and let's just keep that in the back of our minds. Now, unfortunately, we all have different approaches on how to attain those very simple goals, and that's where we need to do a little more work. So let's keep that in mind, and let's bring on my guest for today, Angel Flynn, Gentle World Outreach Director. Gentle World, a nonprofit educational organization whose core purpose is to help build a more peaceful society by educating the public about the reasons for being vegan, the benefits of vegan living, and how to go about making the transition. That makes sense to me. Welcome to It's All About Food.
Hi, Karen. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome, and I'm glad we were able to set this time so that I could talk with you.
So am I, very much.
Now, Gentle World, first of all, I love the name, and when I was on your website, gentleworld.org, your tagline is, for the vegan in everyone.
Right.
That's wonderful.
It is. I think it's wonderful, too, yes.
There was, I don't like to bring up the negative, but I do from time to time, and there was some vegan bashing recently on some LinkedIn group talking about one organization that had basically came out and said, you don't have to be vegan. You just to do blah, blah, blah. And I don't know that that was a good marketing strategy, but for the vegan in all of us, that is genius.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, we believe that really in our core, all humans want to be gentle. All humans want to be peaceful. It's something we believe we all share. So we want veganism to be accessible to everybody. And that's how we try to run our website, is just putting information out there that will be accessible to everybody and that will hopefully inspire others to reach that part of themselves, even if it's very deeply buried.
Gentle World has been around for a very long time.
Yes, it has.
I was reading, it was founded sometime in Florida, like around 1979, something like that?
That's right. The nonprofit organization was started in 1979, and the intentional community has actually been around even longer than that, more like around 1970 or 71.
Tell me about that. What intentional community was that, and are they still around today?
Oh, yeah, that's how Gentle World started. It's a it's an intentional community that goes back to 1970 or 1971. And ever since then, the founding members and the people who have come on board since then have been living the vegan lifestyle all the way back to that time and welcoming others to come and, you know, work alongside them and help to try to build a vegan world. And at a certain point, they decided to incorporate into an educational organization to actually formalize the educational outreach, which has always been in the form of classes and seminars and workshops and that sort of outreach to actually spread the vegan message even further.
So it started in Florida, and this community, are there more than one now? Is it in Florida, Hawaii, New Zealand? Where do we find the community itself?
It's no longer in Florida. They moved to Hawaii before I became involved. That's why I'm speaking in speaking about the group as a they. Mm-hmm. But they moved to Hawaii about, 25 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 15 years ago, they also acquired a piece of property in New Zealand, and that's become a secondary base for us. So we're here on the Big Island of Hawaii, and then we spend the winter months in at our New Zealand center, which is in the summertime when we're in the wintertime. So we have another location there where we also accept visitors, and we have essentially a live-in educational program where people can come and stay on the property and essentially be immersed in a vegan environment. And what we find is that that's an excellent way for people to internalize veganism, because they get to live amongst other vegans of all different ages and different backgrounds and eat alongside us, which is very helpful for people to just learn, you know, this is how a meal is put mm-hmm. together. These are the kind of things that you eat. And, of course, they also get to participate in the cooking if they want to do that, learn how to do that for themselves. But they also get to just live alongside other vegans, which means that, you know, eventually they're going to find themselves in some sort of a conversation where people are just talking about what this means to us and why we do what we do. And more often than not, what we find is that people come to understand it really well during that time.
And how long have you been involved with Gentle World?
I've been involved for 14 years.
Okay. Now, the organization's been around for a long time, and you've been involved for 14 years. Things have changed quite a bit in the last 30, 40, a long time years, but since you started 30-some-odd years ago, and with the Internet now, and podcasts like this one, people have a way to learn very quickly about things. What have you seen change? Has the world gotten any gentler?
Oh, that's a good question, Karen. And it's one that is slightly baffling in some ways, because on the one hand, yes, I think that veganism is growing. There's no doubt about it. Veganism is growing, and there's a lot of good things growing on the planet. And then, of course, there's this strange dichotomy where things seem to be getting worse in certain ways. I mean, animal agriculture is bigger than it's ever been, and a lot of the things that they do to animals are worse than they've ever been. But I do think that the consciousness is growing. Certainly if you look around, I mean, I'm online a lot, and I see a lot of networking happening, a lot of connecting happening. Facebook, with all its pros and cons, one of the things that it's done has really, I believe, is to sort of unite the vegan movement in a certain way. Yeah, there's a lot of disagreement, there's a lot of arguing, and there's a lot of things that do need to be hashed out. You know, mm-hmm. there's a lot of stuff that people do need to discuss, whether certain strategies are effective or ineffective or harmful or helpful. But I think one thing it's done is it's made us aware of each other in a way that we never were before. So when I go online and I see these different vegans talking to each other, I think, I never would have known that person. I never would have known that person existed. And, I mean, we get emails from people in the most unusual places that you never would have thought, you know, so far away. I'm sure you experience that as well.
Yes, that's the inspiring part of it. When you're feeling down and you're seeing all the horrible things going on, and then you hear from someone in a place that you've never been to that seems so far away, and you share so much.
Right. Exactly, and often we'll hear people saying, I want to start a vegan society here,
mm-hmm.
you know, in some unusual place, and that's always very uplifting.
Okay, so Gentle World's been around for a long time, and your website is gentleworld.org. So if I wasn't a vegan and I wanted to take part in one of your programs, where would I find it here on your website? I'm looking.
Yeah, if you're looking at the website, in the top is a sidebar that says has a few different links, and one of them is Contact Us.
Oh, that's
simple.
If a person
clicks on Contact Us, they'll see another link following from that page. That
oh, visiting Gentle
visit.
World.
That's right, exactly.
Oh, very good. So everybody, meet me at Gentle World in a few months, right?
That's right. And even if people can't come and visit, one thing we do encourage people to do is just to go to our website and sign up for our newsletter, because we release a monthly email that just contains all the different stories that we've just published in the last month on our site. And one thing that we try to do is really, every month we try to put together a collection of you know, a variety of vegan information. So we usually have a recipe in there, and we might have a little nutritional piece in there and an environmental piece, and then we'll try to have always something that's, you know, inspiring on the ethical level. Because for us, veganism is about a lot more than food. I mean, the diet, of course, is a big, it's a big piece of it, because our use of animals for food is such a huge, gigantic thing. And of course, for a lot of people, they get kind of stuck on that. Like, what am I going to eat? You know, how am I going to keep myself satisfied and have delicious food? And we really try to address that with people. But we also do try to always remind people that this is about the animals. This is really about a social movement that is trying to end this horrible oppression that's going on all over the planet. And so we always try to address that in our newsletters as well. But in, as I said, in a very accessible way, we don't really show a lot of, we don't really show violent imagery or anything like that. We're trying to, you know, show it in a way that everybody can come to it.
Yes, I agree with you. That's what we do over here at Responsible Eating and Living. It's all about the joyful part of plant foods.
That's right.
All and the benefits.
And it really is a celebration for us as vegans to be able to actually move on from that animal-based reality into a plant-powered reality. It's so liberating to actually relieve ourselves of that and come into a time where we can celebrate life and we can share that together as an incredibly beautiful thing. And the food is a wonderful part of that as well, to be able to move into this really clean, healthy, positive way of being that really celebrates the miracle of life, that food grows out of the ground. That's amazing. The rain waters it and the sun gives the light.
It is amazing. I live in New York City. I have a small terrace, and I try and grow things on my terrace every year. And then I save the seeds. There's something just so profound to me every time I save seeds and put them in an envelope. And I've got a bunch of pots now. Our spring started very late, so I don't have anything growing out on the terrace yet. I've just got these little seedlings growing inside the apartment. But whenever I put a bunch of seeds in dirt and I don't know what's going to happen, and then when these little green things pop up, what a miracle that is.
It is. It really is. And we get to take that and then make it a part of us. It is. It's a beautiful, miraculous thing to witness and to be involved in.
Now, when you were talking about people are always worried about what they're going to eat when they go vegan, I realize, as you were talking, I had a little clarity. So I realized that it's not really all about leaving the meat aside. It's two big things. People don't know where their kitchen is. People don't know how to prepare food. And the other thing is they don't know how to access clean, healthy plant foods, because it's so easy to go to a restaurant, and although it's changing a little bit, most restaurants have a serious animal food focus, and that's what people are used to. So we need better access, and it's improving, and people need to find their kitchens.
Right. Yes.
That's all. And then we'd have a nice, gentle world.
Yeah, that's right. And it does take, for a lot of people, it takes a certain transition, especially if you're not really a cook, you know, or somebody who has experience with cooking. I think that is one of the things that can be overwhelming to people maybe initially. But one thing we try to sort of make people aware of is that there is a transitional period, of course. There's a period of relearning ingredients and just saying, okay, instead of this, I can put this in something, or I can, you know, have my sandwich with this instead of that. And then once you get past that point, I mean, it's a continual learning experience for sure, and hopefully we keep having wonderful new experiences of trying new foods and things that we've never tried before. But once you pass that transitional phase, it becomes very natural and comfortable and easy. And I think most of the people I know who have been vegan for a longer period of time, and it doesn't even take that long, mm-hmm. 6 months to a year or a little around that time, nobody finds it difficult, really. I mean, it's not, you know, once you sort of settle into it, it's not as challenging as people think. You know, people sort of act like this is a tremendous sort of martyrdom, that's something I could never do. But it's really not like that. Once you pass the initial phase, it becomes just as natural as anything.
I want to agree. And for me, I've been vegetarian and vegan for longer than not. So it's my way of life, and it's I couldn't see doing it any other way. I don't see animal products as food. I wouldn't consider eating them, and I find making food very easy. But I know many people struggle. I know because I hear from my listeners who have been listening for years and still say, what should I make?
Right.
And so, you know, I wish we could do some kind of bulk and mind meld and just make it easy for everybody, but it just requires a promise to yourself, a commitment. I am going to be able to feed myself. I deserve to feed myself healthfully, gently on the planet. And just like anything, we need to take the baby steps. We crawl, then we stand, then we run. It takes practice.
Right.
Everything takes a little investment.
Yes, it does. And that's why what you're saying is very true, and that's why we've tried to gear our education largely towards just helping people to learn those skills, because as you say, it is a very it's a very speciesist world. It's a world that's very much geared towards animal-based diets. And so when you do become vegan, you do step outside of that to a large degree. Like you say, eating at restaurants becomes a very, very different thing when you either have one item on the menu or nothing on the menu, or you just don't go to restaurants. I mean, it does. It can change. It can change your life significantly. But, you know, of course, it changes your life in many, many ways that people can't imagine that are actually incredibly positive. And that's one of the things I'm actually working on a piece right now for our website that is a collection of people's different testimonials about becoming vegan. So it's just one or two lines from each person saying the things that they've noticed that have changed in their lives. And it's so beautiful to read because everybody's just saying these wonderful things about, you know, simple things like it gave me more energy or I stopped getting headaches or my skin stopped breaking out, things like that. But then also things like my conscience felt clearer and I just feel more peaceful now and I feel like I know what my purpose is and I feel more love for everybody and I feel more love for myself. I'm kinder to other people now. Just beautiful, beautiful things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of people don't realize how much good they're going to actually receive from it, how wonderful it's going to feel for them, and how much it'll change their lives for the better.
You don't know how good you can feel.
Right.
You just
exactly.
don't know until you do it.
Exactly.
Okay, let's jump over to veganic agriculture, veganic gardening.
Sure.
Now, you have some articles, you have some veganic gardening projects.
Yes, well, Gentle World has been gardening veganically for many years because, of course, in the early stages of the community, one of the first things they wanted to do was grow their own food. And back in those times, it was very unusual for anybody to do organic gardening without things like manures and that sort of thing. And they didn't want to get involved in any of that stuff, so they started looking for different options. And so over the years, we've just learned a lot just through doing it and trying it out and finding out what works. Now, of course, there's a lot of information online. People have written books about it. There are beautiful, huge farms happening, especially in England. There are some beautiful, big, large-scale commercial farms that are growing everything. They call it stock-free or vegan organic. And we have, of course, at our two locations, we have our veganic growing projects that are going on in New Zealand because we have a lot more land there. We have some quite large gardens, crops, whatever you want to call them. We grow large rows of corn and huge amounts of tomatoes and squashes and potatoes and zucchini. We've grown watermelon. We've grown honeydew melon. We've grown all sorts of things. And, of course, it's wonderful to be eating your own food out of the ground that's actually vegan, and you know it's organic, but there also hasn't been any, because, of course, organic food can contain all sorts of very strange things that they put into it, waste from the slaughterhouse floor and fish emulsion and some really gross stuff that isn't even really organic if you think about it. But anyway, so, yeah, one of the things we've also tried to do on our website is to provide information for people who want to do that and who aren't able to, for instance, come and learn alongside us. If people are able to, that's great. They'll be able to pick up a lot if they can come here and actually have the hands-on experience. But we also try to make that available online as well. So we try to, as often as we can, include in our newsletter and on our website an article that covers some different aspect of that, whether it's using grass hay for mulching or a plant like comfrey, which can be used as a fertilizer. A lot of people don't know that the leaves of comfrey make a great fertilizer.
You mean you don't need petrochemicals to fertilize your garden?
I mean, you know, honestly, it amazes me. It amazes me how well the food grows without any of those things.
That's the way nature intended it, right?
That's right, exactly. And interestingly, I think what most people are very surprised by is that you don't just need petrochemicals and the chemical fertilizers, but you also don't actually need animal inputs. And that's one of the big differences between, you know, other forms of organic farming is people are very surprised to find out that you don't have to be using manures or other things to fertilize your garden. One of the things we were talking about recently is this whole thing with hay mulch and the fact that when people use cow manure, they're essentially using grass, but what they've done is they've stripped a whole lot of stuff out of it that's gone into feeding the cow, and you're left with this very, very concentrated stuff that people put on their garden. But if you just use hay mulch, you're using the whole thing, everything that's offered by that plant. Mm. And it's an incredibly wonderful way to feed your garden, really.
Now that's fascinating to me, and it makes perfect sense, and it's just like all of us talking about the importance of eating whole foods instead of processed foods. So the manure is actually a processed fertilizer rather than the whole natural fertilizer.
Exactly. So the cow has eaten the grass. The cow has taken what he or she wants from the grass to feed the body, and then what comes out is just sort of this essentially a waste product from the cow. But if you just mow grass and just take it and put it around your veggie garden beds or around your fruit trees, it rots down and it feeds the worms and it feeds the bugs, and it ends up making this incredibly beautiful dirt that's just very, very, you know, rich and fertile.
So I don't know if you do this to everybody, but you've given me a couple of moments of clarity here during this brief time that we've been talking, where I'm starting to see things in a way where I'm going to use this idea when I'm trying to share information about, especially about veganic agriculture. Now, are there people that are doing, that you know of, that are doing this method of agriculture that aren't concerned about being vegan, but they just don't want to use animal products in their gardening?
I'm not really sure. I do know there are people who are more concerned about the environmental aspects of it and the cleanliness aspects of it. Like, there are people who want to do gardening that just doesn't involve animals. I mean, really, it actually kind of amazes me when I stop and think about the fact that humans still do use animals, to be honest, because it's so backwards and it's so it's so unclean when you think about it, when you think about all the diseases and everything that come out of animal agriculture. So I think for some people it's just a matter of moving into something that's essentially more sustainable, you know, on this planet where we're not going to be able to keep keeping animals. I mean, it's just absurd to keep putting our resources into them and coming back with such an inefficient way of using everything, even, as I say, something like the grass. So I think there is a movement. I have heard of people who are doing stock-free agriculture. It's not so much because of the ethical aspects of not wanting to use animals, but more just moving into a future that leaves that whole thing behind of just, you know, sharing our lives with animals. And, I mean, not sharing our lives with animals, but using them and their waste products to do our gardening when we really don't have to do that.
What's unfortunate is we have universities that are doing a great deal of research, these agricultural universities, and their work is how to make animal agribusiness more efficient. And if they would put those resources, if they would put the time and energy and money towards making organic and veganic agriculture more efficient, it's already pretty good, but we can fine-tune everything. We can optimize everything, and it would be amazing.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. If it would really take off, and if people just, you know, just clued into the fact that this is not the way we're doing things, is not working, folks. I mean, look at what's going on. This is crazy. We need to find a better way. And one of the keys to that is going to be moving on from this absurd, outdated system of farming animals. It's just nuts. It belongs in another time, in the past. And if we want to move into a clean, healthy, livable future, it's not going to include these, you know, the it's just not going to include using animals. It's crazy. And like you say, if we put our attention into these vegan alternatives, which are being developed and are being proven to work, like I say, that there are farms in the UK where they have quite big operations going on, and they are providing produce commercially to people in the area. So it is being tested, and it is being shown to be effective. So, it, like you say, if they just put the resources into that, then we could really get going.
Now, you're in Hawaii.
That's right.
And what island?
The Big Island, which is actually called Hawaii, but it's the biggest island of them all.
It just seems like a natural place where people would strive for a gentle world in Hawaii. Things are, although they've changed tremendously over the last few decades, but there's a lot more farming and nature that's apparent to us. The rain is regular. The weather kind of does its thing all the time. It's sunny, and then you just see a wide range of really natural things. And I think people have a little better appreciation of the environment there and want to keep it nice.
I think that's true. There's a lot of fruit farming that goes on here, and there's a lot of it's a wonderful growing climate, as you say. You can grow food year round. The elements are very, very agreeable. There is plenty of animal agriculture that still goes on, and as you drive around, it's very sad to see beautiful, beautiful natural views just dotted with cows all over the place. And there's a lot of places where you would like to go swimming, for instance, but you know that cows have been upstream. And that's very sad. And, of course, one of the things that's just doubly nuts about it is that a lot of the cows that you see around here are the free-range grass-fed cows that they eat on the mainland. So, of course, not that it would be any better if they were eating them here. It still would be awful, but there's just something even more terrible about the fact that these animals get, you know, shipped back and forth and everything. But yes, it's still, it's sad when you drive around and you see these beautiful Hawaiian vistas just, you know, covered with the visible results of animal farming. And as I say, you know, polluting the waterways. I sometimes wonder whether people here realize that, not that they don't realize that that's going on, but whether they question whether that's right to be doing to this place, because people here in Hawaii love Hawaii, and they love the land here, and they love the feeling of it. But I don't know if they really realize that these big companies who are making all this money from abusing animals are also destroying the place that we live. And, of course, that's true everywhere. I would like to see, you know, it's just you drive around and you think how beautiful it could be if there were orchards in these places or beautiful gardens, or just if they were free, just if the land was freed up from these horrible agricultural practices that are going on. I don't even like to call it agriculture because
we're calling it agribusiness now. We're not, that's...
Sure, yeah, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. I remember somebody mentioning that a while ago, and I've kind of stuck with it because agriculture, I don't want to destroy that word. Culture is
exactly.
A nice word, and growing things, the agri part of it, but it's a business.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Okay. So we just have a few more minutes. Do you have some events coming up or anything special you want to share with us about Gentle World?
Well, I suppose something I could say is that we are currently looking for somebody to come and stay at our Hawaii location for a while and actually help us in our veganic garden here. We are very much in need of somebody with gardening experience to come and just take over our garden for a little while. We have just a handful of volunteers here, and we're very busy with a lot of different things. And so... if there's anybody listening
How big is the garden, and how many people do you feed with what you grow?
It's really just for the volunteers and the guests who are here. It's not a commercial garden or anything like that. It's just a big veggie garden. So we grow all our salad greens and dark greens for green smoothies, and we grow papayas and bananas. And it's nowhere near anything commercial, but it's bigger mm-hmm. than a normal family would have. It's feeding, depending on how many people are staying with us at the time, it could feed anywhere from, you know, 10 to 12 people, something like that. So it's not a, it doesn't require somebody with real farming experience, but it would be great to have somebody who knows about the plants and knows a little bit about, you know, what it takes to just keep a garden maintained. We're hoping to find a magical person who might just want to come and, you know, experience Gentle World for a little while and really help to whip our garden into shape.
Okay, well, I hope there's somebody out there that's listening that is excited by that. I'm excited by that. But I'm a little busy right now.
Sure, fair enough.
But I think I know a lot of people that would love to do that. I mean, go to Hawaii and grow delicious vegetables? That sounds pretty good to me.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, before we go, do you have any cookbooks coming out? I'm looking at the one that I have that's about 11 years old, I think. Incredibly delicious recipes for a new paradigm.
Oh, that's great. You have a copy of the book.
I do.
Yeah, we don't have a new book coming out because it seems like there are so many wonderful cookbooks on the market right now. I mean, it's a beautiful thing to see. When Gentle World did their very first book, it was in 1981, and that was called The Cookbooks for People Who Love Animals, and it's a classic. It sold many, many copies, and we still get letters now from people saying, I've had this book since the 80s, and I love it, and it's, you know, mm-hmm. it's my Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a beautiful little book, and that's still available. Incredibly Delicious is still available, but we're not going to be releasing another one because there's just so many wonderful books, and it's not like it was in the early days when they released the Cookbook for People Who Love Animals. It felt like a genuine mission that people needed a vegan cookbook.
Yeah, there was nothing else out there.
There really wasn't. And again, Incredibly Delicious came at a time when we were able to put color photos in it and make it, you know, even a whole other level of, you know, attraction to people. But now mostly we're releasing things more through our website where, you know, it just seems like a very easy way to get information out there. And, you know, we make all our recipes available anyway for people if they don't want to buy the book or something like that. To us, it's just more about, you know, the education and getting the recipes out there.
Yes. Well, I'm just thumbing through this, and I think you've got every recipe possible in this book anyway, so why would you make another one?
There are 500 recipes in that book, believe it or not. I mean, it's just an incredible amount. And there's a lot of other information in there, too, as well as recipes. It's actually quite a resource book as well as just a recipe book. So, yeah, if people are listening, it's a great gift and it's a great thing just to have for your own reference.
Angel, thank you very much for joining me, and I was really delighted to hear a little bit about Gentle World. I'm so glad you're out there. It's an image that I want to hold with me, the vegan in everyone.
Thank you so much, Karen. It was wonderful talking with you.
Yeah, I hope to visit Gentle World.
I hope so.
Sometime soon.
That would be
yes.
great.
Okay, so thank you very much, and everybody can visit gentleworld.org, and if you're interested in that gardening opportunity, just click on the Contact Us link and let them know you're interested. Now we're going to take a little break. How about it? And when we come back, it's going to be me talking about some things that I think are important today. We'll be right back. Hello, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and this is the second part of today's It's All About Food on March 27, 2014. Now, let's review, okay? I want to hear from you, and you can send me an email at info@realmeals.org. info@realmeals.org. Very good. Ask me anything. I want to know what you're thinking about. And now, just a few thoughts I've been having. First, I like to read the New York Times. There were a few articles this last week. One was about how people don't really know much about anything anymore. We all tend to read headlines. We tend to see what's trending on Facebook and Twitter. And you don't have to go to a movie to know what everybody's talking about, or watch a series of television programs to know who the actors are and what the hot topics are. You can pretty much glean a lot of information just from tweets and headlines and posts, and then make some intelligent decision about it, or some seemingly intelligent decision about it. And then there was another article, a similar concept, on exercise, and how this one particular guy was trying to lose weight, and he was following all the latest claims. I think he was an author at Men's Journal, and was reading about all the latest and greatest exercise equipment, making all kinds of claims, and he came to discover that the best thing that worked for him was the good old-fashioned way of just free weights and working hard, and he didn't need anything really fancy or sophisticated. But the point is that many people make claims all the time, and you read posts and tweets and statements, and people will say something like it is unarguable fact. And most of the time it's just junk. It's a lie, or it's twisted, or it's out of context, or it's misunderstood. And when somebody, this happens a lot, but people like to argue about food with me because they know how passionate I am about food, and they'll make a statement, they'll make a claim, and my first response is, where did you hear that? Where did you read it? And did you go to the primary source for that information? And what's a primary source? Well, if you hear something, if you read something, where did that information come from? I always like to follow it to the origin, some clinical study perhaps, or it can often lead to just nothingness. You know, somebody somewhere said something, and when you discover that that's all it is, and people just keep repackaging it and repeating it until it becomes truth, this is what we're dealing with today. Now, the internet and all this information out there is wonderful. It's rich, and most of it is free right now. but we have to be careful. And when you read something, where you hear something, anytime I hear something and I go, really? Is that really? I always find the origin. And sometimes people will post videos, for example, and I even like to find the primary source for that video, because there are websites and organizations, and they tend to not really create any original content. They just repost from other sources. Well, who put it out originally? They're the ones who should get the credit, and they're the ones you should go to find out whether something is truthful, or at least get all the information that you can so that you can decide for yourself whether it's something you want to believe in or support or talk more about. I want to tell you that I do my best to share the truth. Anytime I talk to an author, I read their book. I don't like to have somebody on that I'm talking to without reading their book. And I get a lot out of that, but I just want you to know I like to share information that I've thoroughly looked into to my own satisfaction. And if you're not satisfied, then you need to do that work. So thank you for listening, and thank you for caring. I said it before, but I'm realizing that I need to say it more, because I'm really grateful that all of you are out there. I love Progressive Radio Network and all the information that's offered here. We really need to do our best to have more of this and have more people listening to it. Now, let's move on, shall we? So we talked a little bit a few weeks ago. I had some cookbook authors on who had a cookbook out called Paleo Vegan, and we've been hearing a lot about paleo diets and vegan diets, and I want to talk about that a little bit right now, because the whole dieting concept, in my opinion, is not a good thing. Nobody should be on a diet. nobody should be concerned about should I eat this or that or how much or how many calories or how many quantities or whatever. We need to rethink the way we think about food. We need to rethink what we're eating. And my way of eating, I think it's the best, but it's easy. I just know the foods that I should be eating, and I enjoy them and eat them whenever I want. It's very simple. What's been curious to me about reading up about paleo diets is I find there's a lot of similarity to those that are on a raw food diet. And I did a raw food diet for about a couple of years, and I know what drew me to it, and that was I wanted to eat the foods that nature intended humans to eat. I wanted to get as close to what nature had designed because I really believed that nature knew what she was doing. And I understood that my food, the bulk of the food that I had been eating most of my life, had been highly manufactured and processed and grown with toxic pesticides and herbicides and all that. And there was something calling in me to say, go back to the simple and eat uncooked, simple foods. Now, it's not as simple as it sounds. Now, maybe if you're living in Hawaii at the Gentle World Intentional Community or somewhere where you have access to food growing all the time, it might be a simpler thing, but it's really not easy when you're living in a city and you want to have fresh, an abundant amount of fresh raw food all the time. Because when you're eating raw food, you really need to have a lot of food, and it's hard to store that food because you want to have it fresh all the time. And I'm at a point where I've kind of made peace with all of that. I found that for me personally, the raw food diet didn't work, and I may get into that if we have time, why it didn't work for me. It may work for other people. But I'm at a point where I really enjoy having a certain amount of inventory in my home of dried grains and dried beans and canned goods that are in BP-free cans, of course, things and dried fruits, things that I can access when I can't go shopping or just know that if there's an emergency or something, I'll always have a good amount of food in the home. And plus, I like to cook a lot, and it's great to have a great variety of fresh foods and then other things that I can use to enhance them. But I think that's a similar motivation behind some of the folks that want to do the paleo. We want to get back to the foods that nature intended us to eat. The problem that I have with the paleo diet, of course, is that it involves animals, and it's really impossible to eat the way we did hundreds of thousands of years ago. And everything has changed. And I realized that when I was on my own raw food diet that we can't really be natural anymore because so much has changed. And maybe some of the things we've learned along the way are actually better than what we were doing hundreds of thousands of years ago. But there's really no way of knowing. So let me just jump in briefly and share my own experience with the raw food diet and why it didn't work for me. I was doing it around 2004, 2005, and I really loved it. I love to cook, but I love to prepare food, and I was having a good time with it. And there were times when I would just have a watermelon for a meal or a bunch of papaya, just a mono meal of fruit. It was heavenly. And then I don't know if it was related or not, but a couple of years, a year and a half into this, is when I started having my ovarian cancer symptoms. And then I was diagnosed, and I went in for a year and a half of treatment, and yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. I had a very devastating disease, and fortunately, thanks to food and great doctors and love and meditation and all the things that are necessary to heal, I'm able to talk to you in 2014, 7 or 8 years later. Yay! But I think I think I had a problem for a long time when I was a teenager, and then as an adult, I was still consuming a lot of dairy, even though I was a vegetarian, but I think I started with a physical problem when I was really young, and I was just living with it. And I think when I started eating all the fruit, my theory is that I had some toxins in my body. Specifically, I used to use a lot of tampons when I was a teenager, and there's dioxin in there, and I got more than a big dose, and I think my body kind of encapsulated all that. This is my theory. I'm entitled to it. And then when I was on the raw diet, I think it was starting to clear that away, and then the sugar, all the sugar that I was eating kind of fed it and grew this cancer. Now, I'm not saying a raw food diet is bad, but I think in this unnatural world, it may not work for everyone. And eating a lot of fruit may not work for everyone because we have so many toxins in the environment and the body has to work really hard to get them out. And that's not just from our food. We have all kinds of contamination in our air. We have contamination in our water. And the body is designed to keep ourselves clear of things, but when it gets overloaded, it's difficult. Now, I know the dark leafy green vegetables are really great for clearing out the body, but sometimes if there's just stuff that it's hard to clear out and we're consuming a lot of sugar, even if it's in the form of natural sugar, like in fruits, that may be problematic. I'm bringing this up because one of my listeners had asked about fruit and how I felt about fruit. And first, I love fruit. And I don't consume a lot of fruit. Well, Dr. Furman, my favorite doctor, recommends about 4 to 5 pieces of fruit a day, and berries should be included in there, pomegranate if possible. Personally, I like to have some berries, usually at breakfast time, with oatmeal or in a smoothie or something like that. And then some time either at breakfast or other times during the day, I may have an apple, I may have a pear, and a banana. And there's my fruit. Occasionally I'll put a fruit in little pieces of fruit in my salad, and that adds up very nicely. But ever since I had that experience 7 or 8 years ago of eating entire watermelons and lots of fruit, I really don't think it's right for me. Now, on the subject of fruit and on the subject specifically of apples and pears, have you heard about this, the antibiotics that are used in fruit production for apples and pears, organic apples and pears? Now, the organic certification is really terrific. I'm glad we have it, but it can be better. And there are a bunch of things that are allowed that probably shouldn't be allowed. So right now, apple and pear producers have been spraying their trees with antibiotics, and this, they're supposed to be phased out by October of 2014, and we hope that they will be, but we have to be vigilant. You can go to organicconsumers.com. They have a petition to tell the National Organic Standards Bureau that we want them to honor that October 2014 deadline for ending the use of antibiotics, specifically streptomycin, on organic apples and pears. And there's also another antibiotic that's used in addition to streptomycin. Reading. And where did I put it? Well, what this does is that there's this thing called fire blight. Have you heard about it, fire blight? And this is what they're trying to prevent by using the antibiotics. Now, we don't want antibiotics on our apples and pears. We don't want them in the soil, on the plants. We know what happens when we overabuse antibiotics, right? We get resistance to those antibiotics. And I sure would like antibiotics to be around for when people really needed them. And just wanted to add the little song. Give me spots on my apples, but give me the birds and the bees, please. Don't it always seem to go? You don't know what you've got till it's gone. How is it that Joni Mitchell was so ahead of her time back in, what, the 60s? But I do want my apples and pears, and I eat apples and pears, one or two a day. They're great for a snack when you want to, when you're hungry, and it really helps curb hunger. And there's a lot of good things. You know, they say an apple a day keeps the doctor away and all that. There's wonderful things in these fruits, and I don't need antibiotics on mine. And there are ways, actually, natural ways to prevent this particular flower blight. And as I was talking before, wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if agricultural schools would actually work on improving organic agriculture processes and worked on finding more natural, earth-friendly ways to grow plants without killing and without destroying the soil, without destroying life. There are ways to do that. I know there are. And still on the subject of fruit, right? So a bunch of birthdays in my family this week. My partner Gary is tomorrow, and my brother-in-law was Monday. And we were all celebrating, and I wanted to make some sort of cake that would kind of please all the diets that are going on in the family today. And there's a recipe I've been wanting to make for a long time. You may remember I interviewed Dr. Alan Goldhammer of the True North Health Center when they had a cookbook come out called Bravo. It was by their chef, Ramsey Bravo, and there are some wonderful recipes in this book. What I love about the recipes are there's no added sugar, there's no oil. Things are just made, beautiful recipes from whole foods. And there was a dessert recipe that I'd been wanting to make for a long time, and I finally made it, and it's fabulous. And it's the, what did they call it? It's a mango banana pie. It has mango in it, banana, coconut. It's not entirely raw. You need to do a little cooking, but it's not a baked pie. But it combines a homemade granola, which is really phenomenal, just oats with some pear juice and apple juice and some dry fruit. Delicious. And then the filling is mango and banana and coconut. Oh, it is so good. And everybody was just raving about it. All different people who had all different kinds of taste preferences. When it all came down to it, this is what they liked. And this is where fruit can really be wonderful. Instead of making a really highly processed, floury, sugary dessert, a dessert like this, there's nothing wrong with it. Nothing. And it's a treat that you can have for breakfast. How about that? I want to repeat something I said earlier today. We all want the same things: clean air, clean water, good food, and abundant food for our friends and family. This is going to be my personal prayer to the universe. We all want these things, and I know for me, I do the best that I can here in my home. I distill my water every day. I make green juice every day. And there are things that I do here that take time, but I'm worth it. My family's worth it. And if you need any help or any tips on how to do better in your kitchen, I need to hear from you. info@realmeals.org. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Karen Hartglass, and this has been another It's All About Food. Have a delicious week.